Welcome, and thank you for standing by. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. All participants will be on a listen-only mode for the duration of the call. During the question-and-answer session, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one. I would now like to turn the call over to Lauren Gaseous. You may begin.
Thank you so much. Good morning, and thank you for joining this monthly climate update call, part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to government, business, academia, and the public to support informed decision-making. I'm Lauren Gaseous with NOAA Communications, and I'll be facilitating today's call. Today's update will feature two short presentations, followed by an operator-assisted question-and-answer session. As always, a copy of the presentation our speakers will be following can be downloaded at http://www.ncdc.noaa.gov/sotc/thebriefings, plural. Our first presenter is Ira Sanchez Lugo, climate scientist at NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, will provide a summary of the January U.S. Climate Report and Drought Monitor. And our second presenter is Matt Rosenkrantz, seasonal forecaster at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, will provide the latest El Nino La Nina update, as well as the monthly and seasonal temperature, precipitation, and drought outlooks for the next 3 months. Our first speaker will be Ira from NOAA.
Thank you, Lauren, and thank you, everyone, for attending this presentation today. So I'm going to go ahead and start talking about slide number two and provide you all with a quick overview of temperatures across the globe during the month of January 2019. Here I have provided you with two maps that are essential when describing the state of the climate. The map on the left is our temperature departure from average, which provides a snapshot on what areas experience warmer or cooler than average conditions. So for the month of January, we see that much of the global land and ocean surface temperature were across the globe were warmer than average, with the most notable warm temperature departures from average observed across southwestern and northeastern Asia, as well as Australia, where temperatures were 4 degrees Celsius or 7.2 degrees Fahrenheit above average. On the other end of the spectrum, the most notable cooler than average temperatures were observed across much of northern North America as well as parts of northern Europe, where temperatures were 1 degree Celsius or 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit above the 1981 to 2010 average. Looking now at the map on the right, which is the percentiles map, this map complements the information provided by the temperature departure map because it takes each of those January 2019 temperature departures for each grid point and places it into a historical perspective, meaning how did the January 2019 compared with previous Januaries for each of those grid points. So the areas shaded in the dark red mean that the January 2019 for that grid point was record warm. And as we can see, much of Australia and its southern ocean was record warm for January 2019, which is consistent with what Australia's agency, the Bureau of Meteorology, reported, saying that Australia had its warmest January on record, exceeding the previous record by 1 degree Celsius. Other areas that were record warm include southern Brazil, parts of Africa, as well as the southern ocean off the south coast of South Africa. The globe as a whole for January 2019 was 1.58 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. This value tied with 2007 as the third warmest January in the 140-year record. Our global temperature data records extend back to 1880. All of the 10 warmest Januaries have occurred since 2002. Looking just at the global land, this was the fourth warmest January on record at 2.72 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. Currently, January 2007 was the global land's record warm year, followed by 2016 and 2017. Much of the warmth that we saw across the global land was primarily driven by the southern hemisphere land, which is currently in its summer. And as well, much of the U.S., we heard about the polar vortex that brought bitter cold temperatures across much of the U.S. However, across the southern hemisphere, there were countries that experienced intense heat due to heat waves, such as Chile, Brazil, and as well as Australia. Across the global oceans, it was 1.17 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average, and this was also the third warmest year on record behind 2016 and 2017. Moving to slide number three, here we have what we call our horse race graph, and this graph compares the year-to-date temperatures for the current year, in this case 2019, with the current top 10 warmest years on record. The January column, depicts only the January value, but as we move forward through the year, for example, the column in the February section will depict the average for January and February. When we move to March, it will be the average for January, February, and March, and so forth till we get to December, which will be the average for all 12 months. So right now we're depicting how 2019 did in its first lap in a 12-lap race. And as we can see, it was the third warmest. Right now here in this graph, we do not show the 2007 year because it did not end up as one of the 10 warmest years on record. So in December of last year, with our November 2018 global report, we released a new global annual temperature ranking outlook, which provides statistically informed outcomes on how the year will rank. And this does not take into consideration any climate or weather model. It is based on current anomalies and historical global annual temperature values. So by doing this analysis, we get that 2019, it is almost certain with a 99.9% chance that we'll end among the 10 warmest years on record, with a very likely 94.8% chance that it will end among the 5 warmest years on record. And this particular product, we will update it on a monthly basis. Moving now to slide number 4 to zoom in towards the contiguous U.S., the map on the left shows the temperature departures from average across the contiguous U.S. As we can see, much of the U.S. experienced near to warmer than average conditions. Again, much of the people will remember the polar vortex because we did experience some across the High Plains and the Great Lakes region, some bitterly cold temperatures at the end of the month. However, when we calculate the average for the month, those extreme temperatures get tempered, and the outcome comes to near the climatology. So across the West, we saw above-average temperatures in parts of the Southeast as well. California had a temperature, January 2019 temperature, that ranked as the 11th warmest. However, no state had a temperature departure from average that ranked below average for January. And as a whole, this was the contiguous U.S. still had a January 2019 temperature that was above average at 2.6 degrees Fahrenheit, which ranked as the 29th warmest January on record. Looking now at the map on the right, which depicts the precipitation, as a whole, it was near average with 0.18 inch of precipitation above the 20th century average. This tied with 1939 as the 37th wettest January on record. Regionally, we saw that about much of the eastern half of the contiguous U.S. had near to above average precipitation during the month. However, most of this was concentrated across the Northeast. Statewide, Vermont, Rhode Island had their 8th wettest January on record, and New York and New Hampshire had a January precipitation that ranked as the 11th wettest January on record. However, no state had a top 10 dry or on record for January. One thing that I wanted to highlight was that in terms of snow cover extent across the contiguous U.S., it was near average. For the Northeast, one particular snow event that occurred on January 20th, there were up to 2 feet of snow that fell across portions of the Northeast, which contributed to a record snowiest January for caribou. Maine with 59.8 inches, and this shattered the previous record at 44.5 inches set back in 1994. And then I forgot to mention, if I can, back to the bitterly cold temperatures that we saw at the end of the month, I did want to mention that we did see daily records, but there were also some states that did see some monthly records. And one of them that I wanted to highlight was that Mount Carroll, Illinois, recorded a minimum temperature of negative 38 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 2 degrees colder than the current record. And I say this because the negative 38 degrees record Fahrenheit needs to go through a process of review, which will currently take place in the coming weeks. So if it is approved, it will become Illinois' lowest minimum temperature on record. The previous record was set in January 5, 1999. Moving forward to slide number 5, this is the current drought map. This map is very useful because it provides a snapshot on the drought conditions that are occurring across the U.S. This was released earlier today. And so for the U.S., as you can see, things due to the precipitation that we had during January as well as the first 2 weeks of February, much of the eastern half of the contiguous U.S. is mostly drought-free, and much of the drought has been concentrated across the West and Texas. Currently, 15.1% of the contiguous U.S. is in drought, this is 1.4% below since late the end of January. We did see some improvements across parts of the West. Again, this is due to precipitation that occurred during the month of January and parts of February, improvements across the High Plains and Florida. We did see some degradation across parts of Texas and Idaho. In terms of outside of the CONUS, Hawaii, thanks to some precipitation that they received in January, drought conditions have improved slightly in the Big Island, while dry conditions persisted across Puerto Rico, and this contributed to some deterioration across Puerto Rico's southwestern coast. That is all I have for now. I will hand it over to Matt.
Good morning. This is Matthew Rosenkranz from NOAA's Climate Prediction Center. I'm going to discuss today the sea surface temperature and El Nino conditions first, and then I'll move on to talking about the monthly and seasonal outlooks as well as the seasonal drought outlook that was released this morning from the Climate Prediction Center. So on February 14th, the Climate Prediction Center issued an El Nino advisory, which means that we are currently in El Nino conditions. So we have them in the ocean, and we have the corresponding conditions in the atmosphere. The characterization of that is that we are in weak El Nino conditions. Those weak El Nino conditions are expected to continue through the northern hemisphere spring. There's a 55% chance of that continuation, so that is slightly above normal chance for that. There's enhanced odds or increased odds of that remaining in El Nino conditions compared to climatology. Then as we move out into the future, the odds of being back in neutral conditions, where neutral becomes as likely as being in El Nino conditions, that returns in May, June, July. So that's kind of what that graph down in the bottom shows, is that where the gray bar and the red bar become equal, then that's when you're likely to get back to have more of a neutral condition. And then going out through the rest of the 2019, and so neutral is the most favored, or El Nino neutral conditions are the most favored category. So stepping on to slide 7, the monthly forecast for March. The monthly forecast for March has a good bit of below normal temperatures favored over the central portions of the lower 48, of the contiguous 48, with some above normal temperatures favored in the southeast and in the southwest, and as well as over western Alaska. Over western Alaska, the above normal temperatures are favored there mainly due to the predicted associated with a lower than normal ice coverage. Right now, the current ice edge is a couple hundred miles short of the long-term median ice edge, and it is expected to retreat even further during March. It would retreat March, April, May. That would be that springtime retreat of the ice. So we're expecting it to pull out of each one of those western portions of Alaska slightly ahead of climatology, so that favors an above normal temperature forecast there. Trends are a big driver of the temperature forecast in the southwest. The forecast for the below normal temperatures over the central plains is very much related to an early month cold snap that is in the current outlook right now for the week two outlook. So the beginning of March is looking to be quite cold across the northern plains. That signal is likely to fade a little bit through the month of March, but the second half of March is likely to be warmer than the first half, but it should start pretty cold. The precipitation outlook, if you have that cold air coming down to the central part of the U.S., you're going to drive a mean cold front down to along the eastern coast of the U.S., and that will interact with the moisture coming in from the south. So you should have continued rain over some of these areas that were just highlighted in the earlier portions that have had high amounts of rain over the past month and even over the past 3 months. There's a lot of uncertainty in the precipitation outlook for the western U.S. Some of the shorter-term models were looking quite wet, and then some of the longer-term models into the second half of March were looking quite dry, and trends would favor dry, especially in the southwest. So we did not make a forecast out there. There are no strong climate signals in either direction. Moving on to slide 8, the seasonal forecast for March, April, May. The highest percentage for above normal temperatures is on the north and west coast of Alaska, where by the end of May we should have an ice edge retreat from there, and that's the ice edge is going to again retreat faster than normal because it's not as far south as normal conditions. The ice is also a little bit thinner in consistency, so it's likely to break up earlier and earlier, and that's a trend we've observed since the 1970s. For the contiguous 48 states, the strongest signals for above normal temperatures are mainly right in the Pacific Northwest, where you do have a lot of influence of sea surface temperature, and there's a lot of trend in the forecast out there. But especially by the time you get April and May, there's significant trends for above normal temperatures. As you get into the eastern parts of the U.S., the forecast is only for a slight tilt towards above normal temperatures. Trends in the southeast in April and May become strong. Model forecasts that we have now also highlighted into the northeast for above normal temperatures, and a lot of those trends really come out in the May part of this time frame. Another factor in consideration of this forecast has been those recent rains that were talked about. There's been a lot of precipitation in the Ohio and Tennessee valleys and the Midwest, and that can tend to have a lagging effect and keep temperatures down in the April and May timeframe, where increased soil moisture from prior rains can help decrease temperatures. So that's why the probabilities there are kind of muted, and they don't extend further to the west, even though many of the dynamical models wanted us to have put above normal temperatures all the way back to Illinois. For the precipitation outlook, we're looking at, again, an active southern stream, especially for the first part of March. And then the potentially return of precipitation. And so that active southern stream for March can have above normal precipitation, especially into the Rio Grande Valley and in portions of the southern Rockies. And then into the May timeframe, we're looking at some moisture surges coming into the southeast U.S. So that supports above normal precipitation there. The local precipitation recycling, which would be the high precipitation and high soil moisture that is over the plains, the impact of that really comes in the May timeframe and the June timeframe, so that's not such a factor in this outlook, but is a factor in our later lead outlook. Moving on to slide 9, the seasonal drought outlook. Consistent with the precipitation outlook that has a large area of above normal precipitation forecast, our above normal precipitation favored across the southern, central, and southern Rockies, as well as down in the Rio Grande Valley. The seasonal drought outlook favors improvement or removal across most of those areas. The core drought areas where they are considered D3 or extreme drought currently, those areas are typically are going to be expected to improve, but could still be in drought condition by the end of May. There may not be enough precipitation to completely alleviate drought conditions there. Two areas of forecast drought persistence are in the Pacific Northwest, in the rain shadow of the Cascades in Oregon, and also into the shadow, the rain shadow of the mountains up into Washington. That is all I have, and I will pass it back to you, Lauren. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. We'll now take specific questions from our call participants. Please be sure to identify who you would like to answer your question, if possible. And operator, if you would, please remind the participants how they can ask a question and queue up the first one.
Absolutely. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 from your phone, unmute your line, and record your first and your last name clearly when prompted. Once more, please press star 1 from your phone, unmute your line, and record your first and your last name clearly when prompted. One moment as we wait for our first questions. Thank you. Our first question comes from Seth Bornstein from the Associated Press. Your line is open.
Yes, I guess this is probably more for Matthew. You talk about with the forecast, you know, looking at that U.S. drought outlook, which honestly, I don't think I've seen it that low in a long time. The issue with the rains we've had just this week, this month, it's been a rather wet time the last 6 weeks or so. Can you address the flooding concerns? I mean, usually spring is a flooding issue, and we haven't heard about flooding except, you know, we do seem to see a forecast, especially in the south, in the southern part of the country where there's a lot of above normal precip. I mean, you look, what was it, Tennessee's getting 7 inches this week or something like that. So what kind of flood outlook are we looking at here?
All right, Seth. This is Matthew Rosenkranz from the Climate Prediction Center. NOAA is going to release a flood outlook next month. As it should be about the same time as this call, in concert with the seasonal outlook. I've just been informed it's supposed to come out March 21st. So the official NOAA flood outlook will come out then. Up until then, yes, there are significant flood impacts forecast for a lot of the Mississippi River drainage basin, everything kind of west of the spine of the Appalachians, and all the way down through the Central Plains. There's been a lot of precipitation that had fell recently. There's a lot of snowpack to the north that will slowly melt out, and all of that is going to end up having to drain down the Mississippi River and some of the other smaller rivers that are in that basin. So there are significant flood impacts forecast in the next 2 weeks, but as far as the official spring flood outlook, we're going to have to wait until March 21st until the Office of Hydrology and the Climate Prediction Center, so we all get together and come up with the official outlook.
Okay, and in terms of just overall, in terms of the drought outlook, 15% or so, that's far below the year before, and I think a couple years before. What is normal for this time of the year? I mean, and is this close to a record low for drought percentage?
No. So I have the drought monitor. Again, this is Matthew Rosenkranz from the Climate Prediction Center. I have the drought monitor table up. The lowest value I can see on there for D1 and greater is actually 4.52% of the contiguous U.S. So the 15.4 is not a record. It's low, but again, you know, not a record. The drought condition index associated with that, it's basically middle of the pack in the 50s.
Okay.
So it's not quite it's low in coverage, but it's not quite record low. The record lowest is actually that I'm seeing is from May 23rd of 2017.
Okay, but I meant for this time of year, though, this, you know.
For this time of year, it's low, but it's not a record.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 from your phone, unmute your line, and record your first and your last name clearly when prompted. One moment as we wait for any additional questions.
If there are no additional questions, I think we can move forward to conclude.
No questions in queue at this time.
Okay, great. So we'll go ahead then and we'll wrap up today's call. First, I'd like to thank our speakers, Ira and Matt, for their time and everyone else for participating who joined our call today. I'll end by reminding you to mark your calendars for some upcoming dates. The February release of the U.S. Climate Highlights will be on March 6th. The February release of the Global Climate Highlights will be March 18th. And as Matt mentioned, the spring flood outlook that coincides with the seasonal outlook in March will be on March 21st. Finally, an audio file of this call will be posted on NOAA.gov with the media advisory within about 1 hour to 90 minutes of today's call. If you have any further questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to me at Lauren, L-A-U-R-E-N, dot Gacheus, which is G-A-C-H-E-S, at NOAA.gov. And my contact information is also located on the top of the media advisory. That concludes today's call, and I thank you all so much.
Thank you for participation in today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.